Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello. Welcome to the Cartoon Saluniverse, the podcast that swings open the doors of one of the world's greatest animation studios, Cartoon Saloon. I'm Michael Leader, and I've seen the lot of them.
I'm Steph Watts.
And I'm Jake Cunningham, and we're crowding round the table.
So join us on our quest into the glorious world of Cartoon Saloon.
Well, very quickly, perhaps sadly, we have reached the end of the Cartoon Saloon journey. We've covered the four features that the studio has made, but that doesn't mean our series ends because there is still quite a bit to cover. Michael, what are we going to be talking about in this episode?
It's funny, isn't it? We start every episode with me saying, and I've seen a lot of them. And the thing with Cartoon Saloon is you watch those four features and you think, oh, that's a nice, tidy, easy output for us to cover. But no, the well goes so deep. They have made TV series. They make short advert-type specials. They have short films as well as all sorts of unmade projects and other bits and bobs that we want to shout out. So we're using this final episode as a way of rounding up a few of those things that we just wanted to talk about, or at least nod to, because it's all part of the Cartoon Saloon story. You know, one thing we said early on was that they started out as feature filmmakers, that's what they wanted to do, but they had to keep things going in between these massive projects. And they are industrious, to say the least, in terms of the things they're doing in between the films. So it's only right that we end with that. But of course, we have other bits of wrap-up to do, don't we? We have our final rankings. We also get to give the name to what our final rankings are even going to be called. So we have some great listener messages on that topic, and also on topics generally related to Cartoon Saloon. So quite a lot to get through in this sort of ragbag, mailbag, roundup episode.
Well, shall we start then with in territory that's fairly familiar to us, which is films, but just shorter ones. So let's talk about Late Afternoon. Who's this one by?
So this is directed by Louise Bagnell. Have we mentioned Louise on this so far? So she has credits on the last couple of Cartoon Saloon films, but this is her sort of first big directorial effort for the studio, a short film that ended up getting an Oscar nomination. It's a sort of 9 minutes long piece about a lady called Emily and how she's being taken back through the memories of her childhood and her young age, with a sort of light theme of exploring memory loss, dementia, old age. It's not explicitly said, is it? But it is exploring that through animation.
Steph, what did you make of Late Afternoon?
Well, Cartoon Saloon just seems to be out to make me cry in every single thing they do. This was no different. But really, really lovely. I feel like, yeah, like you said, Michael, that kind of exploring of like old age, maybe dementia. It's something that kind of recently we see a lot in like horror film and TV. I guess because it is something quite scary. And yeah, just like all of those kind of dips into memory and the way that memories appear through kind of taste and sight of like little things like dropping a biscuit into tea that can bring up like so many other old memories and stuff. So yeah, I was like really impressed and it's really lovely.
Yeah, I think this is a really amazing short film. I loved it. I think the use of shape and colour shows us that this is very much part of the Cartoon Saloon family of wanting to kind of take things to their most simplified but most powerful version. So in this one, you've got characters who heads are maybe just a circle like we've seen in The Breadwinner or Song of the Sea, but they don't even have a neck. They're just you can just tell it's a person's face that is connected to a shape of a body, but it doesn't matter because it's all in the pursuit of emotion and the pursuit of story. And it's all kind of tied to that exploration of memory, that it is kind of keeping things really loose, and the fact that the body parts don't connect kind of feels right for this world in which kind of memory and thought kind of collapse in on each other. And weirdly, it's maybe the most connected to a Satoshi Kon film that we would have covered, in the way that kind of realities will blur and that you'll use the shape or color of something from a certain reality to transition you into another one and back out again. And those the colors here, like the way that something in your present day, the way that you see the color red on something or the color purple on something, and it's just a flat block color, but it's obviously a beautiful Pantone shade, I'm sure. But that color just follows the story into the past and back out again, and it's really simple storytelling stuff to just give you this one thing for you to follow through the story and back out again. But it's so good. But also, there's no milk in the tea, which I find strange, particularly for an Irish story. I mean,
that's a side joke. I think this is a really lovely film. We've talked so much in this series about how Cartoon Saloon as a studio as a whole very much are interested in stories and in narrative and storytelling. But this short moves away from that tradition of storytelling into a more sort of associative, emotional landscape of memory. It's interesting you bring up Satoshi Kon because that's sort of what this is, and almost the animation style at times is what we associate with Satoshi Kon, where it's very elastic, these amazing camera moves where the forms warp and change when you're in this subconscious memory world. I do love the simplicity of that character design as well. You say that some characters have a head with no neck. That's just Emily, I think. I think all the other characters are fully formed figures. And it's almost just this perfect, subtle, understated bit of character design that Emily is a character where her head is separate from her body in a way that her brain or her mind is going through these various layers of memory that dislocate her from the physical, where her body is in this this living room, sitting room with this character that we're not sure. Kate, we find out her name is she a carer? Is she a family member? And it's through this journey through memories that really takes some very emotionally impactful turns, going from crashing waves from the swirling of a teacup, from the other one? This amazing shot of a train, a nice recurring motif for us as Ghibli Attack the podcast. All this imagery that then finds a specific memory that is a moment of realization and recognition. It's something that is very profound in the short film format that doesn't need the structures of the framework of stories upon stories and stories within stories that we have within the feature films. It's something that's purely emotional and really wonderful as a result, I think. But that was Late Afternoon, which is one of Cartoon Saloon's more recent short films. I think for the next one, what I want to highlight, I'm going to go right back to the beginning, one of their very first short films, which is From Darkness, directed by Nora Toomey, who of course did The Breadwinner as her feature film. But this is something very different too. Jake, did you spot anything different about this?
Oh yeah, I mean, they've been they haven't been Justin Timberlake in The Social Network just yet at this point. And by that, I mean, you'll notice at the start of this film that they are the Cartoon Saloon.
Right.
But that's maybe not the only thing that people will notice about this one. This one is scary. It's a scary film. This is more so than The Breadwinner in terms of like not showing this to younger kids. There is skulls and drowning and darkness, and it's all a bit intense, but it's really good. And there is stuff here that is still familiar. That doesn't mean to say, like, because it's scary, it doesn't feel like Cartoon Saloon, because it weirdly still does. Something that we've tracked throughout all of these, which started maybe as a coincidence between Kells and Song of the Sea, but it's kind of carried through everything, is hair. And where hair has been a way of kind of showing emotional or familial connection, or just kind of a reflection of the wildness of the inside of someone's character. In this, we've kind of got hair that almost acts like a trap as well. And the way it kind of sprawls off in all these tendrils, it's a bit like the naughty version of the sewer lad from Song of the Sea, I suppose.
I mean, it is a bit naughty, right? So this is based on an Inuit folk story, showing how Noritumi very much is influenced by the sort of international storytelling traditions rather than maybe Tom Moore, who very much focuses on Ireland and Irish folk stories. But it is a horror, right? It's about this skeleton that is unearthed by this fisherman and comes home with him for the night. And it has a little bit of a sexy undertone too.
Yeah, I mean, imagine if like Song of the Sea and the kind of mystical sea creatures was this. If this was just the full film, it'd be quite a different vibe. But I really liked it, and it's fun to see like a silent short, and you can just like really watch all of like the animation and that like that really creepy imagery, and yeah, sexy skeleton lady. It's good.
Yeah, the skull in particular is quite haunting. It's got these kind of big cavernous eye sockets, which are quite a lot to deal with when you're used to nice soft kids films.
You know, we should shout out that so many of these films are available to watch on the Cartoon Saloon YouTube account, or at least trailers or clips from them are. And you know, we're only going to kind of go through some of the highlights or some of the ones that are linked to previous films we've discussed, but there's another Noritumi one there, Backwards Boy. There's Ledge End of Phil and Somewhere Down the Line, which are very different in terms of their style. What's amazing is how they use these shorts as opportunities for filmmakers rising through the ranks to show off their style, to have their first directorial credit perhaps. One that's really important in the history is Old Fangs, which was directed by Adrien Marigeau, who, did we mention, he was quite integral to the making of Song of the Sea in that episode. But he left the studio and is now actually Oscar nominated this year in the Best Animated Short section for Genius Loci, or Genius Loci, which is, I think, one of the front runners in that category. But let's bring ourselves up to date with two final little shorts we want to talk about. These are two almost created in lockdown during the pandemic projects. So let's start with There's a Monster in My Kitchen.
Yeah, so this is actually the most recent Tom Moore film, we should say. This is a little short made in collaboration with Greenpeace, with a young boy and a monster kind of breaks into his house, and it tells a story from two sides of the kid being afraid of the monster, and then the monster being afraid of the deforestation that has destroyed its own habitat. And it's really beautifully animated. And it's also a sequel, which I was not aware of when I watched it the first time, and that there was a previous advert as well called There's a Jaguar in My Bedroom. So if you want to get in nice for 4 minutes worth of watching there and get two very lovely animated short films in, I would recommend those.
Yeah, I found it so interesting. So this, it starts out in that sort of kid's storybook poem kind of, you know, bedtime story vibe about there being this monster in the kitchen, And then, just in case you're under any illusion that you weren't watching a Tom Moore film, that comes through right at the end of the message that it's the meat industry that is at the heart of deforestation and destabilizing the planet, which I don't think he's actually hammered so specifically as a theme before. Of course, that's something that's fed into Song of the Sea, specifically in terms of how industrialized processes can disrupt the land and our connection with the land.
But it does kind of make sense to get them to do it and for him to do it, because I think with any kind of environmental or charitable or kind of activist cause, the hard thing is making people care about it. And you, of course, hire the studio that are so good at very simply and very quickly getting to quite intense emotions, which Steph can attest to. And yeah, get Tom Moore to do your 2-minute film that's going to make everyone reconsider their meat consumption.
And even within that, we did say how these short projects are often used as an opportunity for other members of the studio to cut their teeth as well. So this is actually, you say it's a Tom Moore project and we focus so much on Tom Moore. He co-directed this with Fabian Erlinghauser, who we've talked about before as a real stalwart of the studio. And we'll probably mention again later in this episode too. But before we move away from shorts, and this is the sort of short promo, viral, shareable video subgenre, there's something that they released just a couple of weeks ago, right?
Mm. And so this was a short released on St. Patrick's Day, which brings back Maeve from Wharfwalkers, and we're always happy to hear more from her. And this kind of, can you officially say it's a Wharfwalkers prequel?
I think it's pitched as that, because I think Screen Ireland, when they posted it, said it was like a prequel to Wharfwalkers, or from the world of Wharfwalkers.
A Wharfwalkers story.
Yeah. Sort of tying the history or the folk stories behind St. Patrick's Day in with the Cartoon Saloon cinematic universe, which is fun to see.
But it's a really nice short, and it's because it's all kind of made as one descending shot, which is really impressive. So the quote unquote camera moves down the frame as the animation moves up it, in the way that you might see a credit scroll. But you kind of get the story of St. Patrick's Day through all of this. So it's more like we're moving down a moving tapestry, I suppose, rather than just like frame by frame animation.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
1-800-Flowers.com is more than your birthday, anniversary, or just because gift-giving destination. We put our hearts into everything we do to help you celebrate all life's special occasions with friends and family. From our farmers and bakers, florists and makers, everything from 1-800-Flowers is made with love every step of the way, because we know that nothing is more important than delivering a smile. To learn more, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So from one-off shorts, let's move to multi-episode stories. It's time to talk about Cartoon Saloon on the small screen. Mm-hmm. Michael, what's happening on the telly?
Well, that's the thing, right? We focus so much on these features and theatrical releases, but as I said, Cartoon Saloon are industrious. They want to keep in business. The foundational TV series in Cartoon Saloon's history is a series called Skunk Fu that they did quite early in the 2000s or the mid-2000s. And that was the series. I quoted Paul Young in the Song of the Sea episode about when he said that after Secret of Kells, they'd had a BAFTA nomination and an Oscar nomination, and they still couldn't keep the lights on. And they were going from contract to contract. And that was because they'd had the Oscar nomination for Secret of Kells, and they'd had a BAFTA nomination for Skunk Fu. Now, what is Skunk Fu? I think this is the outlier. We're talking about how most of these projects are very un-Cartoon Saloon in terms of the style that we've discussed them building across their features. Skunk Fu is sort of like, the way I talk about it is like Samurai Champloo, the Japanese anime that takes a sort of anachronistic look at the samurai period with hip-hop references and so on, but with farting skunks.
I would have definitely watched this show. it reminded me, I don't know why, there was a show that I was really into just before this time called Yvonne of the Yukon, which right. was about a French guy who got trapped in ice and then woken up 200 years later in Canada. Just pure silliness. And actually, I realized that I haven't watched like a 11 minute, two part kids show in what, 15 years? And Skunk Fu did it for me. I had a very fun time. But Skunk Fu is maybe not the show that they are most known for.
No, and it's worth saying that the creator of Skunk Fu was Adrian Hart, who in some tellings of the Cartoon Saloon story is listed as a co-founder, but I think it was after Skunk Fu that he moved on. So it's almost like he was one of those key creative leads early on, but then his influence would have slipped away when he moved away, and it becomes more about Tom Moore's sensibility, Nora Toomey's sensibility, Paul Young and the others as well influencing. And the next series that we're going to talk about is absolutely from drawn from the similar creative world of the features, and that's one that's quite well regarded and talked about quite widely, but particularly within parent circles, and that's Puffin Rock. So let me just tee up Puffin Rock. Puffin Rock is one of the purest, most cozy, wholesome shows imaginable. It's about a family of puffins and their various animal friends living on an idyllic island off the coast of Ireland. And our two leads are Una and Baba, two siblings in that great Song of the Sea, My Neighbor Totoro kind of tradition, as they go about their very low stakes adventures around the island. And it's on Netflix. And that probably is what's given it this big push in terms of popularity, because it is available internationally on Netflix. It's huge in China, apparently. This is the one that really is huge in terms of merchandise as well. We don't think of Cartoon Saloon as merchandise, kind of a merchandise powerhouse, but Puffin Rock is,
oh, yeah.
is the
well,
one.
I was looking at the art books of all of Cartoon Saloon stuff, and you've got the art of Secret of Kells, and you've got the art of Song and Sea, and all of these kind of coffee table books in the book section for Cartoon Saloon, and then you've got an Una and Baba adventure. And you've got like multiple spin-off Una and Baba books. They're the great export.
Steph, I have a feeling that Puffin Rock is more your speed.
Speed than Skunk Fu. Although, I mean, yeah, like Jake, when I was probably about like 8 or 9, Skunk Fu would have been completely my jam. But I mean, the first episode of Puffin Rock, they are transporting a frog back to his home. I love frogs. Love cartoon frogs, especially. This was extremely satisfying to watch. It's super nice. Like, it's just so kind of calming, and like, definitely I feel like something that you probably play a child before bedtime, mm-hmm. to like calm everyone. It's just lovely, isn't it? And then the kind of lovely narration over the top of just like, oh, puffins. Silly puffins. Like, Yeah, it's so good. And I think like that kind of, yeah, environment, like gentle environmental message and kind of looking at like the constellations in the stars and stuff like that. It's just so kind of, yeah, calming. I could definitely see myself just watching all of that despite not having any kids.
Yeah, I was talking to my neighbor over the fence who's got a two-year-old, and we were talking about work, as you do, and the podcast series came up, and I mentioned Cartoon Saloon, and he wasn't very aware of it, and I kind of went through the credits and they said, oh, and Puffin Rock. Oh, Puffin Rock. And that is one of the little girls' absolute favorites is Puffin Rock.
So I think if you've watched the films and you wonder what else does the studio do, we've talked about the shorts. I think the shorts are such a good next step, but Puffin Rock is very much within the same universe as their films and absolutely something, somewhere to go next. But the amazing thing about their TV work is that they work with everybody. So they work a lot with RTE, the Irish broadcaster. They work with Nickelodeon, CBBC, Cartoon Network, Netflix. They even work with Amazon too. We'll come to that in a second. But they work with all sorts. They don't just do one thing. So there are a couple of other series they've done very recently, which we've not been able to watch too much of. So there's Dog Fandango, which launched in 2020 on Nickelodeon, and there's not currently a way to easily stream it, at least not with the subscriptions I have, so I've not been able to watch too much of it. But that's much more in that 8 to 10 year old and up animated tradition. What we should say about Dog Fandango is that it's based on an original idea by Nora Toomey and Fabian Erlinghauser, who we mentioned in the short section. So this is just such a big commission for them. And we have Puffin Rock, which couldn't be more Tom Moore in some ways. And then we have something else here, which has very different influences. And I'd love to actually watch more of this if I can find a way to subscribe to Nickelodeon. Not, you know, I don't have Sky or anything. But it's about an ordinary kid who falls in with a crowd of magical beings, including a unicorn, an ancient witch, a ghost and an alien who have all escaped from Area 52. And it just sounds like exactly the sort of thing I would have loved when I was that age, really. And I think that's what I like about Cartoon Saloon's TV series. They make the sort of, maybe this is actually a pretty good sort of strand of DNA that comes from their films. Their feature films are told and created so much with their kids in mind. There's such a connection to their inner children or their real children. And their TV series too just seem to be tapping into some sort of inner child as well. And whether that is their own experiences or maybe informed by their own kids too. It's quite fascinating to see. All of these would be my jam if I was in that key demographic age.
There is one other TV show, which is Viking School, which I think would go down well with any How to Train Your Dragon fans out there. And this is made by a collaboration with a Norwegian production company called Storm Films. And what I like about this is that, Steph, you would know this, that there is like lots of Viking anime that and huge fandom for Viking stories within the anime world. And then Storm Films come along and work with Cartoon Saloon on Viking School, which you can probably guess what it is from the title. But in their description of it, they say it's the only Viking animation made by Vikings. So I'm imagining these animators just like just crashing through their desks with like horns of wine and like scratching at pieces of papyrus to make these kind of flick book stories, because they're in between going off and killing loads of people.
That's amazing. And that's what's great about fanning out from the films, is that they're breadth of references just go really broad to, you know, Vikings and ghosts and aliens and everything. But we should actually mention that for TG4, which I think is the Irish language channel in Ireland, they have done these series of sort of animated music videos for Irish folk songs. And so if you enjoyed those sections in Song of the Sea and Wolfwalkers, check out the series. You know, some of the clips are on their YouTube channel. I don't know if TG4 have anything upon their streaming service too, but it's also a really good way to get a sense of the breadth of animation talent and style within the studio, because it's one where they may have a series with 10 episodes and every episode would be by a different director in a very different style. So they, another example of them using the short form of TV or shorts to really develop their talents and show off what they can do, their range. But what really fascinates me in doing the research for this final wrap-up episode, you find stories around the internet of various projects that Cartoon Saloon were involved in that maybe didn't come to pass. And some of them are really tantalizing. So there's one that was definitely, we saw stuff from, which was Eddie of the Realms Eternal, which was an Amazon pilot when they were doing that pilot, the pilot season for Prime, which didn't come to series. There are still some places that have that 30-minute pilot up there. It's worth looking at. There's a series called Ellie the Ace, which was created by Louise Bagnall before Late Afternoon, which looks incredible, about a young wannabe flying ace who's obsessed with Amelia Earhart. And it has this beautiful animation style to it. But even though there was a lot of chat around the time a few years ago of it being of this big co-production with financing in place and being shopped around at festivals, it never came out. And on her Tumblr, Louise Bagnall, I think, bundled together some story concepts into like a mini comic that's worth looking at. And I love her art style. Worth seeing. But the one that took the internet by storm very recently while we've been recording this mini-series is, and I don't know if you, Jake or Steph, whether you heard about this before we found it for this episode, but Cartoon Saloon were contracted by Disney to pitch for their version of a Winnie the Pooh series, which, yes... I mean, unfortunately, this was years ago, and people found on Ross Stewart's art site, obviously after Wolfwalkers, everyone's been going to Ross Stewart's website and looking at what he's been up to, because he has, you know, various concept art up there, and he had concept art from this, you know, unrealized series of Winnie the Pooh done in Ross Stewart style. And then there's Monica Armino, who's a sort of concept artist, background artist, who's also put up some stills from this. And I don't know, have you looked at this, Jake and Steph? What do you make of this? And also, what do you make of the basic concept of a Cartoon Saloon Winnie the Pooh series?
I'm very much up for this. I'd like to see them operating with something that kind of already exists. Like, what is their version of it? The way that people are like, oh yeah, what would Quentin Tarantino do with Star Trek? I would be happy, very, very happy to see them take on this. Or actually, like, any other kind of big property. Like, what would the Cartoon Saloon version be of Percy the Park Keeper?
Yes.
Yeah, it looks so nice, because as well, I mean, most of my memories of Winnie the Pooh is like just him in the forest and not really kind of connected to like the human world. And then a lot of the concept art is kind of Winnie the Pooh in a back garden with a house and a trampoline and like at the shops and stuff like that. So that's like really interesting, I think, to see that kind of Winnie the Pooh vibe translated into like suburban environments.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I immediately think of those landscape shots in Song of the Sea when the kid, you know, when they're going across the fields, and you have those beautiful almost cross sections of like the badgers underneath in their dens underground. I almost think of that interspliced with, because, you know, recently with my toddler Ivo, we've been watching the Disney Winnie the Pooh films. And they're quite meta in what they do, because they actually have like the physical book of the of Winnie the Pooh opening, and you see the map of 100 Acre Wood at the beginning, and all the characters are sort of in situ on there and the pages are turning. I can really see the way that Cartoon Saloon have incorporated storytelling, sort of meta storytelling devices like that. They have it into their films. They're going to do that similarly with a Winnie the Pooh story. I've also recently, in such a typical hipster animation dad way, been saying, okay, we'll watch a bit of Disney Winnie the Pooh as long as we can watch the Soviet Winnie the Pooh in Russian afterwards. Because Vinnie Pooh is so good as well. Although Ivo doesn't recognise that brown bear in the Russian animation as Winnie the Pooh. He only recognises the yellow bear. But that would be amazing. I know that we've said that Cartoon Saloon is such a bastion of original, unique, distinctive animation that could only come from the studio. But wouldn't it be fascinating if they did get a property like that?
Well, like something totally out of their wheelhouse as well. Like Star Trek Lower Decks. Mm-hmm. Like this, I'm just going off of Star Trek here. But something that is kind of for a more grown-up audience, but is based on a well-known property, like one of these many Star Wars universe shows. Like if something like that came their way, God, that would be so cool.
I'm sure off the back of Wolfwalkers, which we said had much more of a Hollywood sheen and an action-packed sort of edit style and action to it, they must be percolating all sorts of ideas that are a bit more action heavy. Because of course we said, you know, at the beginning of the studio, they were inspired by 90s Disney, like Mulan, but then also very much the Genndy Tartakovsky world of Samurai Jack. So they have that in their DNA.
And who needs kind of other people's properties to do your big TV show when in fact they could just make their own, right?
Absolutely. So we know that off the back of their collaboration with Apple for Wolfwalkers, that they've been contracted to do a big fantasy show. I think it's really just talked about in those terms, right? It's like a fantasy epic. We don't really know much about it yet. But in the press release, it says it's something massive coming from Cartoon Saloon.
And we take that money.
We want to chomp down on that. But I guess that will be coming a bit further down the line than their next feature, which we know is My Father's Dragon, which will be directed by Nora Toomey. And that's with Netflix. So they're in bed with all of the people with the purse strings right now.
But perhaps most importantly, there is a Puff and Rock film.
Yeah. Puffin Rock on tour. Una and Baba go large in Ibiza. I do wonder, so yeah, that there is a note on their website about this Puffin Rock movie. I do wonder if it's on a similar scale to the, just to draw an example that's from a similar, you know, demographic, like an Octonauts movie or a Peppa Pig movie, which might be actually more for streaming platforms, but it's just a bumper episode. Or is this like a Shaun the Sheep movie, which is very much a theatrical release? I guess we'll find out, and just we'll find out how many explosions there'll be, I guess.
Yeah.
Celebrity cameos.
And it's so exciting that My Father's Dragon is just around the corner, because we had such a long wait from doing all of our Ghibli films to then get a new one. It's quite nice to cover all of Cartoon Saloon's features. And then we've only got to wait probably a few more months and then we can add another one.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? You know, with Ghibli, we'd be waiting 6 years from Marnie to Earwig. But literally in the course of making this miniseries, Cartoon Saloon put out two things.
Yeah.
But they were short things, but they were new things for us to talk about. So it's great to have welcomed them into the Ghibli Tech family. And we can't wait to talk more about their stuff down the line.
And if you want to hear people that aren't us talk about this kind of thing, there is a little podcast corner that I've created for this episode for people that want to branch out. If you liked Wolfwalkers and Song of the Sea, then Will Collins, who was one of the writers on those, has got his own podcast called The Best Bits, which is talking about the best versions of certain things in film. So that might be best Harrison Ford moment or best Tom Cruise running moment. And it's very, very enjoyable. It's with another Irish writer called Kevin Lahen and would thoroughly recommend.
I'd like to shout out Kevin because he wrote the script for what was a really fun horror comedy from a few years back that I think I saw at Fright Fest, maybe around 2012, 2013, called Grabbers, which is where sort of an alien invasion that's happening, and the only way to survive is to get drunk in a pub. So it's worth digging out, I think. Quite a fun one.
Definitely. And people should check out the Screenwriting Life. One of the hosts of that is Meg LaFauve, who is one of the writers on My Father's Dragon. She also was a writer on Inside Out and lots of other stuff. But what's really nice about that podcast is that the podcast is being recorded at the same time that My Father's Dragon is being made. So when she's talking about the screenwriting process and the stuff that she's working on at the moment, it's quite nice to know that that is this Cartoon Saloon project, as well as many other things. And if you want to get right inside Cartoon Saloon, then check out The Speakeasy, which is not on any podcast platforms, but is on the Cartoon Saloon website with your host, Tom Moore, talking to two different Cartoon Saloon staff members about their work. I think that's about 13 or 14 episodes, so people should absolutely be checking that one out for a glimpse inside the studio.
I think The Speakeasy is a very good Cartoon Saloon related pun, but I think we would have gone with a more pun, right? So you want to know more.
A grease angle, tell me more, tell me more.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Give me just a little more time.
But I suppose, yeah, we're being very smug here coming up with puns for someone else's podcast when we fail to come up with a pun for our own for what to call the ranking of the Cartoon Saloon films, our equivalent to the leaderboard or Jacob's Ladder for this series. But luckily, we threw that responsibility over to our listeners, who very graciously sent in some letters for our mailbag. So should we open the mailbag and have a read?
Absolutely. So let's kick things off with Charlotte Sandberg, who wrote in to say, hi guys, thank you so much for the great podcast about Secret of Kells. I've been a fan of Cartoon Saloon ever since I saw Song of the Sea in the cinema when it was released in Ireland. Since then, I've watched all their work. One thing I think you missed on your podcast, even though you almost got there, was the snake theme. The legend in Ireland is St. Patrick's came and rid the island of snakes. I would take that to mean that snakes represent the ancient magic of the Celts, and St. Patrick is the new religion driving it out. All the magic in the movie is snake-like, culminating in an actual ancient magical snake that Brendan must face. The snake gives up its eye to enable Brendan to see the page and add his own illustrations to it. I think that is the message of the movie, or The Secret. The message is that the Book of Kells is a revered religious text, but its secret is that it was made with ancient magic, drawn with the eye of the snake. What do you think, from Charlotte, English girl living in Galway?
I mean, that's some deep folklore there. I think we said on that episode that we weren't too au fait with Irish folklore, but thank you, Charlotte, for giving us a theory in that direction there. Let's pull out another letter. This is from Luke Thorne. Hi. My first Cartoon Saloon memory was watching Song of the Sea. I was completely blown away by, in particular, its stunning visuals. For me, it's the best animated feature of 2014, and I still continue to think about this movie almost every day. Kind regards, Luke. Thanks, Luke.
I mean, I'm with you there, Luke. Absolutely. I particularly during the run of this series, I do probably think about just if one little image comes through from Song of the Sea every day. That has lingered long in the mind.
We have another letter from Connor Holt, who says, hello, Ghibliotech. My favourite thing about the films of Cartoon Saloon, apart from the gorgeous animation, is their celebration of Irish history and mythology. I'm American, but my mother is Irish, and I've tried to learn more and more about my ancestral homeland. When I first saw the film Secret of Kells, I enjoyed it as a lovely animated tale. When I rewatched it several years later, after actually seeing the Book of Kells in Ireland, I was blown away at the ingenious way they translated that history into a story accessible for children. So much of Irish cinema is either witty comedies or dramas about the Troubles. to have three animated films about three different eras of Irish history and various areas of folklore is an incredible gift, both to the people of Ireland and to audiences worldwide who have never heard of Selkies or Wolfwalkers. I feel incredibly blessed that Ireland has such amazing artists at Cartoon Saloon who care so deeply about their cultural heritage.
And finally, Ian Purcell, who says, "Hello, I'm loving the podcast about the Cartoon Saloon films. Song of the Sea is one of my favourite films and happy to say it is up there for my daughter too, working out the best way to try and see Wolfwalkers." Well, hopefully you're able to watch it now, Ian, if you can borrow someone's subscription to Apple TV Plus. For your ranking of the films, I have a suggestion of what you can call it. What about Saluniversity Challenge?
Yes.
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 Very, very good, Ian. He says, "I discovered your podcast a couple of months ago and have been prompted to catch up on the Ghibli films I've neglected. I've been touched by Pom Poko and Only Yesterday in the last 2 weeks." I mean, Ian's talking our language here. Next up, Princess Kaguya. "Thanks. Keep up the good work. It is part of what is keeping me sane through this whole time." Oh, Ian, thank you so much. Nice. And yet we've got to take him up on the Saluniversity Challenge. What an inspired name. I don't think we ever even came close to something as clever as that. And that leads us to our ranking. Michael, Steph, it is time for the Saluniversity Challenge.
So let's start with Watts, Warwick.
I can't believe I'm on the Saluniversity Challenge. How exciting. Been thinking like over the past couple of weeks where we've had a break to kind of think about our rankings. And I think mine is mostly the same, to be fair. Like, I think I still play Song of the Sea at the top. But then I think I have kind of a tie between Wolfwalkers and The Breadwinner. I don't know if we're allowing joint second. But those two, I just feel like, are so close for me. It's really hard to pick kind of a proper ranking. And then Secret of Kells, and then Frog Episode of Puffin Rock. That's my final ranking.
With Frog Episode actually being number one. That's reverse order,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Cunningham, Kent.
Have we all got alliterative universities to our surnames?
I don't. I ruin it right at the end.
Oh. Well, I think mine has slightly shifted as we've gone on. Maybe the thing that has surprised me has been how much The Breadwinner has kind of remained in my thoughts through the series. And it was maybe doing our episode on it that made me think about that film a bit more. Because initially that one was at the bottom. And I think it's so interesting. I think it's so beautifully told. And I think it is so powerful in those last few moments when he is revealing the true story to the Elephant King. And that bit particularly has stuck with me. So I'm going to go with Secret of Kells, then The Breadwinner, then Wolfwalkers, and then Song of the Sea at the top for me. But finally, Leader, Birmingham.
Oh man, the dream, being on University Challenge. Although my nightmare of being on University Challenge would be being on and then getting the film round wrong.
Yeah, but luckily you've turned up to one where it's very specifically about the films of one Irish animation studio.
Absolutely. So I think going from top to bottom, it would be Song of the Sea, Wolfwalkers, and then joint bronze, Kells, and The Breadwinner. And I think I discussed this maybe on the Breadwinner episode, in fact, where I think that The Breadwinner is such a assured, comprehensive piece of a film. Secret of Kells has that experimental, rough edges to it as a debut. So I think almost as the extremes of their craft are worth kind of putting together there. However, Song of the Sea and Wolfwalkers are just the ones that absolutely beguile and fascinate me, as we've discussed on this podcast, because I love how Cartoon Saloon and maybe it's worth talking about Tom Moore at the centre of it, but all of his collaborators, how Cartoon Saloon and those two films are really looking at Irish folklore and history, this specificity of place and identity, the traumas of the past and the hopes for the future, and how there is something within the ground and the natural world that can help them see the way forward. So those are the two that are the real gems of the studio for me, but really there isn't a dud in the lot. If I could bring in, as Steph did, a reference to this episode, I think Late Afternoon would be right in the middle there. I think that is such a triumph and should be sought out by anybody, really. Even if you're not a big fan of the folklore stuff, it gets away from that. It's so separate from what the other films do, but it's really worth seeing.
So there we are. That's the Cartoon Saluniverse. Have we've reached the edge of it. But of course, like any universe, it's ever expanding. And we look forward to exploring where it goes. Thank you to all our listeners for joining us on this journey. We hope you've enjoyed discovering these films if you're watching them for the first time or just joining us along the way. It's been a real pleasure. They are some incredible filmmakers, and it's been such a pleasure. And we're going to be taking a little break, but only a short break, because the podcast is going to be back in just under a couple of months. We've got a new series coming at the end of May, and we have actually already teased what that one's going to be, haven't we, Michael?
Well, we've teased two aspects of it, definitely. I think one thing that's going to be happening towards the end of May, or depending on the world outside our windows, maybe into June, is the reopening of cinemas in the UK. And Earwig and the Witch is finally going to be hitting the shores of Britain. And to mark that, we do have interviews with Gorō Miyazaki and Toshio Suzuki to put out on the podcast feed, which, you know, gosh, particularly the Toshio Suzuki one feels like a real peak for the podcast, something on our to-do list that we've had for 2-3 years now finally crossed off.
Yeah, cannot wait to get that one out. I'm sure they'll be broadcasting Earwig in all the Spy Sports pubs serving fish and chips and pasty and peas. And yeah, I can't wait for that and everything that will come after it. There's lots of exciting things happening for the podcast, and we look forward to sharing those. But in the meantime, you can keep up with us on Twitter. The main podcast is there at Ghibliotech. You can also email us at ghibli@little.studios.com, and you can keep in touch with all of us individually on Twitter as well. Steph's over there at _StephWatt.
Michael is there at MichaelJLeader,
and you can follow Jake at JakeHCunningham.
Ghibliotech is a Little Dot Studios production. Our music is made by Anthony Ng, our artwork is by Sophie Moe, and the show is produced by Michael Leader, Jake Cunningham, Harold McShill, and Steph Watts. That's me. I'm the editor as well.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. and they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.